Hey there, it's Lacey J from Space Bear Media, the makers of Lost in My 40s. Did you know that you can go to spacebearmedia.com right now to access all our content, including our weekly video pre-shows, where your hosts ponder ethical questions related to the week's episode and answer some fun questions just for, well, fun. Speaking of fun, if you have it, thanks to our content, please consider rating or reviewing Lost in My 40s on your favorite app or recommend us to a friend who loves Lost. Hello and welcome to season two of Lost in My 40s. We are back with you today with two full episodes for you to listen to. This
or not.
One is,
I mean, you or not. Not listen to
no, not, no, I mean. Or not. Do it. This one is titled Man of Science, Man of Faith. It is a Jack-centric episode, and because it is the first one of the season, we're going to have Derek presenting. But first, we're going to go to Ben, and we're going to talk about our power rankings, where we ended up at the end of season one, and a few other fun little things. So we do wipe these clean for season two. Everybody starts off at zero, because so many characters come and go, it just seems crazy to do it cumulative. So we're doing it by season.
Yeah.
But last season, Ben, remind us, who were our top three and who were our bottom three?
Well, no surprise, Kate ended up in the lead with 169 points.
I love that there's a 69 in there. That's yeah, just so really, fucking really.
Yes, it is.
In second place, we had Locke at 150 points. And again, in third place, Dr. Bronze, Jack, with 133. The bottom of the barrel was ruled with an iron fist by Shannon at negative 113 points. Yeah. And then in the middle slot at negative 56 points was Ethan. And her little, whatever her name is, Shannon's little fuck buddy, Boone, ended up at negative 42 points. And he ended up dead as well. So I doubt he's going to be gaining any ground in season two.
Yeah, that's really interesting that two of the bottom two characters didn't make it through the whole season even.
And wasn't Ethan only in like a few episodes?
Yeah, maybe three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how bad he was. Alrighty. So let's talk about a few other fun little things before we move on to the episode. Ben, who was the most fucked?
I mean, come on.
Probably
obvious.
Yeah,
it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I think probably one and two are probably pretty obvious. Can we guess who one is?
Oh, most fucked would be Kate, and most killed must be Shannon, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Ethan. Nope. Shannon?
No.
Okay.
Shannon was killed a lot.
Actually, we're talking most killed. Sorry, that was Boone, actually. Boone and Shannon were the top two. Ah. Yeah, Boone ended up with negative 27 points, which means he was killed nine times.
Wow. Okay. Who was the most loved non-main character?
This was a little surprising to me. The most loved non-main character was Nadia.
Really?
Yes.
That's interesting. I probably bumped her points up because I think I fucked her once. I had a threesome with her in sight, I'm really sure. Yeah, that's really interesting. Okay. How about the most hated non-main character? Well, I think I have an idea.
I would say Rose is higher, but I consider, I guess in the first season, she's not a main character. So Rose was actually, I would say if we consider her a non-main character, then she was the most loved.
There's a gray area there,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
One would be an off-island character.
And one is an on-island character.
On-island, non-main.
I feel like, for me, I was denoting main character by whether or not they had their own flashback episode.
Okay.
So for those of you...
Season one, Rose didn't have one.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Most hated non-main character, I have a feeling.
Randy Douchebag Nations.
It's gotta be.
Well, I mean, if we don't consider Ethan a main character, then he was the most hated. Because he was in second place, period. So
again, that's on right. Island,
like, on off island, off island again.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Shall we get on to season two? Episode one, Man of Science, Man of Faith. Derek, take it away.
Okay, so the episode opens with a black screen and a beeping sound, and then an unknown eye opens, and it cuts to a very old DOS prompt on a monochrome monitor. A man sits up in the top bunk of a bunk bed. He jumps down and slides over to the computer in a chair because it's still beeping. He starts typing on the keyboard and was using what I call the hunt and peck method, using his fingers, so he obviously didn't know how to type. And then he presses a button that says execute, and it stops the beeping, and you hear some kind of mechanical sound like an old teletype machine. So he gets up, walks over to a bookshelf, and he chooses a record, you know, those old vinyl things for those younger people.
Vinyl things.
And starts playing a song called Make Your Own Kind of Music by the Mamas and the Papas. And while that song is playing, he's washing dishes. He then starts working out on a stationary bike, does some pull-ups and sit-ups, then showers, does a little bit of laundry, and makes some kind of smoothie. Then he gives himself an injection with this device. It's called a jet injector. That was actually used a lot in the 70s and the 80s, like by the military and things like that.
So yeah, this is where it like takes a weird turn, right? So you're just kind of watching this guy. He's getting up for the morning, doing whatever he's doing. It's clearly the 70s or whatever. And then he injects himself and you're like, oh,
yeah, that was just like, what the hell?
I'm pretty also, impressed with how much
when I initially go ahead.
I said I was pretty impressed with how much he squeezes into one Mamas and Papas song. Like, he did like a full workout, made a smoothie, like all kinds of shit. And but the song wasn't even over. Like, the dude's the dude has got efficient use of his time.
Uh-huh.
Very.
I can remember when this at first aired and I was watching it for the first time and I thought I had the wrong channel on. I was like, what is this? This isn't Lost.
Yeah, it seems so normal, yeah.
Well,
like, this is a guy's routine.
Right, and it just, I was like, I expected it to open on the island, but, and it can't be a flashback with somebody I don't know, right? And then I just remember thinking, like, something's wrong, and I changed the channel and changed it back, and was like, oh, all right, well, I guess this is actually the show. So, anyways, he's injecting himself.
So, wait, those kind of injectors, we were saying that they were, like, big in the 60s and the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I have a scar from having a smallpox vaccination.
Yep, all of them.
Yeah, because my dad went overseas, and then my mom and my sister and I followed, so we all had to get the smallpox vaccine, so we all have the scar. My brother was born after we came back to the States. He doesn't have the scar, so when we were little, we used to tease him and be like, you're adopted, and he'd be like, nuh-uh, and I'd be everyone who's in our family has one of these, and you don't have one.
Now, did you sit on the toilet and do a lot of research before you got that shot? Because that was a vaccine. Oh my God.
I was like 2 months old, so no.
Yeah, I never got that either. I think it stopped in like the early 70s in the United States, like before I was born. Yeah.
Well, I was born in 75, but
since because
we were going overseas, yeah, we had to have it. Yeah. So, sorry, go ahead.
So after a while, he is injecting himself. Everything shakes, the record skips, and you see all this dust falling from the ceiling like there was some kind of explosion nearby. So then the music changes to the dramatic, and this man hurriedly gets dressed into some sort of uniform. He opens a vault that has a shitload of guns and arms himself with the, I mean, it's like an arsenal in there.
Yeah.
So he arms himself with a rifle and a pistol, and then he goes to like some kind of really old control panel that lowers the lights. And then he goes to a device that looks kind of like a telescope and flips some switches, and these mirrors start rotating. And the camera kind of goes from mirror to mirror until you see a larger mirror pointed upward at the bottom of some kind of shaft.
Periscope.
Giggity.
Yeah.
It's like a periscope, exactly.
Yeah.
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 And the camera pans up, and you see Locke and Jack looking down into the hatch that they had just blown open. So the explosion that the unknown man heard was the dynamite.
What?
In the end of season one.
This is me watching it for the first time. I'm in the hatch! I'm in the hatch! watch.
That's exactly how I felt when I watched this. I was like, finally, I know what's in the hatch.
Did you see it coming, or were you just like, holy shit, when it pans back and shows you? I thought,
this does not seem like would be part of the show Lost. It really just didn't make sense to me. And then that look on Locke's face as he's peering into the hatch was just classic.
That reveal was a fucking amazing. And I just want to like talk about the writing, how they leave you off. Season one ends. You're going down that tunnel, and it essentially begins with going back up it. You just don't know it yet. And for me, these first minutes, like opening minutes of season two, are arguably some of the best writing of the entire show. Not that it's all downhill.
I agree so far what I've seen.
Not that it's downhill from here, but like just very specifically this moment and this reveal and the way that they wrote that and sucked you in and surprised you. I fucking love
it. Some guy doing routines. But see, then whenever he did the injection, I was like, wow, that's kind of strange.
Right. That's where it takes one turn and then you get that reveal and it's just like, holy shit. Ben, did you remember this part?
Yeah.
You did? Okay.
Yeah,
is nobody else this excited? I guess just Derek and I?
I remembered this part. Like, as soon as they opened, you know, onto the printer or the computer, and then I guess it was Desmond's eye, I knew.
Who?
I think you're giving something away, brother.
Brother.
Right. So that's when I was like, oh, okay, yeah. It was still an exciting way to open the show for the season. I absolutely loved it. I loved watching it a second time, you know, because I only watched this one time through back when it was, you know, originally aired. So even though I realized, oh, okay, here's where we are, it was still exciting.
Yeah, one of my favorite moments. So anyways, then we get the Lost title screen, right?
Yep.
They can give you 30 seconds to breathe while you have a commercial.
Right. So now we're back in the jungle outside the hatch. So we're back in Lost. You know, you can turn the channel back. And Hurley is repeating the numbers and then says, 4-8, we're dead. 15, doomed and dead.
Yeah, he did. He was losing his shit.
Oh, yeah. He was gone. And Kate asks if he's all right, and he says, yeah, awesome. I just have to pee.
Like,
that was so funny.
What?
It's random.
Oh, my God.
Poor Hurley. I feel like there's a couple characters. There's a couple characters that kind of lose their mind in the first couple episodes of this season, where they just, it's kind of like uncharacteristically doing like just doing really weird shit.
Yeah.
I guess we'll get into that. I feel like from Hurley's point of view, I just can't even imagine, like, he's been dealing with this in these numbers, and to see them on the side of the hatch, like, I think I would lose it too.
Oh, definitely.
Just like how I can't escape it. I can't get away from these numbers. And I mean, I'd be panicked if I was him.
And he called the blown hatch a burning death hole.
Wow.
So Locke is, of course, he's eagerly looking down the hatch, and you see that the ladder is kind of like been destroyed halfway down. So Jack says the plan to get the other survivors into the hatch to keep them safe will not work now because they won't have enough time to do it. Locke, he grabs a rock and drops it down the hatch to gauge how deep it is, and it hits, sounds like a puddle, and they estimate it to be 40, 50 feet tops deep.
How they know that, I don't really know, but okay.
I mean,
you can
kind of guess things like that.
32 feet per second squared.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
At sea level. Right.
And they're pretty much at sea level.
Yeah.
Locke says that they could use some wire that they pulled from the fuselage and make a harness to lower people in, but Jack interrupts him and says they are leaving now. I mean, Jack is really adamant on leaving. Hurley thinks that's a great idea, but Locke says they went through.
He just wants to get the hell out of there. Let's get the fuck out of here.
But Locke says that they went through a lot to get there. Locke says to calm down, to which Jack replies, you can go exploring in the morning, but he's going to get the dynamite and they're going back to the caves. And then Jack tells Locke, how about you just pack it up, John? And then they kind of have a staring contest at each other for a while. And then Locke says, sure. And then he asks Jack, why don't you want to go down there?
Yeah, Jack, it's a creepy Locke moment.
Super bossy.
Yeah.
He is being, yeah, you're right.
He was very bossy at that in that scene.
Yeah, you're not the boss of me.
I don't know. I mean, I do see Jack's point there. It's like, okay, look, we got this thing open and we've got this other thing that we're going to have to deal with. Like, they're under the impression that the others are still going to be coming. And they, you know, he's That's got right, more pressing yeah. issues here. And it's right. like, okay, maybe if there was a ladder there, he'd be like, okay, fine. But this is just another obstacle. Like, and he's right. You're not going to get that many people down there. And if you're, you know, if you're afraid of the others coming, then it's like, we got to get back to our people.
Right. Yeah, and protect them and worry about the hatch later.
Yeah. So in that way, I think him being bossy is him trying to look out for, you know, the body politic.
And I think Locke, the way that he challenges him with the, you know, why don't you want to go down there? I think what he's trying to say is like, Jack is afraid to find out that Locke is correct. That's what I think he's saying to him. Like, if we get down in there, you're going to find out that this was our destiny and that the hatch has all the answers and sure. you don't want to go down there because you don't want to be proven wrong. That was the way I read it, but.
Yeah, watched I can see that too.
Watched it, yeah. I meant like read the room.
Yeah. So after Locke asks Jack, why doesn't he want to go down there? We cut to the first flashback of the episode and season. And we're in an ER where a female in her late 20s is being wheeled into the operating room with a piece of the of a steering column sticking out of her chest.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah, it looked painful. She was a mess, too. So Jack arrives with a some kind of horrible wig or toupee
hair. Amazing.
It's like this idea that I guess like if his bangs are like pushed forward, that means he's younger. That must be what it is.
They didn't glue it down in the back. I mean, that's that to me, like you see when they do side shots of him, you can actually see the wig like curling away from his neck.
I didn't notice that. Oh, my God. Yeah,
I just noticed how horrible it was.
Oh, God. Yeah. Is that I feel like that's something they always do in shows. Like anytime they want to make somebody look younger, they put bangs on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
everybody had bangs when they were a kid or something.
I mean, I think that's exactly why. Because you're, I think you're it just more makes likely
people
to
look ridiculous.
Well, I mean, it depends on the haircut. Some people look good with bangs, but his looks stupid as fuck.
Oh, God, it looks so bad.
So he's preparing for surgery and tells someone, one of the people there, to page his father. And they say that the woman was in a head-on collision with an SUV after jumping the median, so we find out that she's Jack's future ex-wife.
Yeah.
And the driver of the SUV is brought into the same room, and he's not breathing. And Jack is being called by everyone, you know, treating both patients. So he gives instructions on how to treat the man, but the nurse says he can't intubate, but Jack has to.
I feel but like, Jack is that just, correct? I feel
I
like
don't know.
People
I don't know.
Other than the doctors should be able to intubate.
I would think they should at least train a nurse how to do that.
I mean, all I know is veterinary medicine, and as a licensed veterinary technician, I had the legal ability to intubate animals, and I didn't need a doctor for that. I just feel like, I mean, it's such a life-saving thing that you would think more people on an emergency team would be able to do that.
Just think if there's like some kind of disaster and they needed a lot of intubation.
Right.
Or COVID.
Yeah. There's one. I think that can't EMTs intubate?
They've got to be able
they
to,
would
because
at the scene,
otherwise
you could
die.
So I would say that if an EMT can intubate, then a nurse should be able to, because EMTs have a lot less training.
Yeah, that's what I would be
nursing
thinking.
Students.
So. I mean, could it also not be just a policy at the hospital itself?
Well, I suppose.
It's possible.
But it seems like a dumb one since the guy died.
Very. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. Anyways.
Well, I'm sorry. Their head of surgery is kind of a shyster at this point. So, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, right. Well, he's drunk doing surgery.
Yeah. So maybe he's drunk when he's coming up with policy as well.
So Jack is focusing on the woman and pulls the piece of the steering column out of her chest and then uses this big syringe and draws fluid out of her chest, which does stabilize her blood pressure. But the man dies, and they pronounced him, I think, like 8:15 a.m.
There you go.
8:15.
Yep. So he orders her to be taken to the ICU, and she whispers, "I have to dance at my wedding." So then we go back to the island, and it's nighttime. It's still day 44, and the survivors are in the caves where Charlie is telling them that nobody is out there, that the French woman is missing a wing nut, and it's all bollocks. Love that term, yeah, bollocks.
Yeah. Well, I this like is weird to me too. Because Ethan was one of the others, you know? So now Charlie's saying there are no others. Well, where the fuck did Ethan come from then? He's not buddies with Danielle. So I don't like Charlie's thinking here.
Yeah, I guess he's just convinced that she was using as an excuse, like as a ploy to steal the baby. But yeah, I mean, if you do stop and think about it, then right, where the fuck did Ethan come from if there aren't others? Yeah.
I think maybe it's just Charlie trying to like reassure people and not being particularly good at it. Cause he's, you know, he knows for certain that what he's saying is wrong. So I feel like he's just trying to like, I don't know, provide them with some sort of reassurance against his own experience.
You think so? Oh, maybe.
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. He's trying in his Charlie way.
Yeah.
Yeah. He even tells him that she's
sorry.
Yeah. He even tells him that, Danielle set the fire herself, and Saeed is like looking at Charlie, who says, "What?" And then Saeed says, "Nothing."
Yeah, because I think Saeed knows at that time that sort of lie isn't necessarily a bad thing, because it might be, you know, it could be keeping people calm.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
and then Shannon appears, and she lost Vincent.
Oh.
Already,
she is already from the so offing, useless. Fucking useless.
Yeah,
and can't even keep a dog.
I know. It's the second time she's lost him. She lost him at the very end of the of episode 25 too. Almost drowned himself to get away from her.
Yes, a smart dog.
Seriously,
getting away from her, not drowning himself.
Like, how did she manage almost the entire first season where her hair was, like, flat ironed, and now it's in this teased football helmet-looking fucking thing?
Yeah.
She just looks like a mess. She's a mess all of a sudden.
Yeah. One day of pet ownership has just fucking wore her out.
It hasn't even been a day. It's the same
it's
day
been a few
they
hours,
left that morning.
Seriously.
Yeah.
So, like, since Walt gave her this dog has been lost more than it's been in her protection. So,
yeah,
good job, Walt.
Basically.
Yeah. Good character references there.
Yeah. So, she's asking if anyone has seen the dog, and she grabs one of the plentiful torches that are always available. I mean, those things are everywhere. And heads into the jungle, telling Saeed, when he asks her what is she doing, that she lost the damn dog. And Saeed follows her into the jungle. So we cut back to Locke gazing into the hatch lovingly. And Hurley asks him, why did he light the fuse? And Locke replies, why wouldn't I? And Hurley says it's because he was running towards him, waving his arms, telling him not to. Locke laughs and says he was excited to get inside and why they got the dynamite from the Black Rock and came to the hatch. That's the whole point. And calls him Hugo. Jack says it was to save everyone's lives and mocks Locke for saying, maybe it was our destiny, John. He kind of said it to Locke going in that tone.
Right.
And Kate calls him over to the hatch door that had been blown off, and they look down at it and it says quarantine.
What?
Yep. So Shannon and Saeed are walking through the jungle, and he tells her to quit yelling out Vincent's name. And she replies, you said there wasn't anyone out there. And he replies with, well, we didn't see anyone. And she said that Vincent was the only thing that anyone had ever asked her to do.
Wrong. Absolutely wrong. I guarantee you, one of her rich boyfriends on a sailboat asked her to do anal.
Oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I agree.
This was the only thing anyone asked her to take care of, I guess. other than that sore butt.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit. All right. Oh, God.
So Saeed asks, like, you know, looks like you can tell that she's, you know, pretty tired, and asks for the last time she ate or slept and that she's exhausted. And just as she says that she needs to find that dog, they hear Vincent barking and they can see him sitting in some bushes. So Shannon, you know, starts walking towards him from the front while Saeed says he'll circle around back. And of course, Vincent runs off with both of them giving chase. So Shannon runs clumsily through the jungle calling for Saeed because she obviously lost him and ends up tripping on something and falling down. She gets up and she's, you know, looking all around, and then she starts hearing whispering. And then all of a sudden you see a very creepy looking Walt standing there, and he is drenched and staring at Shannon.
Rode hard and put away wet.
Oh man, yeah. He looked really creepy.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, they had him. It was weird, like the way he was wet, it almost looked like there was a layer of water just covering his entire body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really strange. It wasn't like he was in the rain. It was like he was covered in the water at that very moment.
It's almost like they put, like, with the lighting, it's almost like they put baby oil on him or something like that to make it look like his entire body was, like, super soaked.
Yeah, he just borrowed some of Sawyer's.
Yeah, I got some of Sawyer's. He just did a slip and slide over over Sawyer's pecs.
Oh, my God.
So she calls out his name, and he just kind of puts his finger on his lips, telling her to be quiet, and then says something that you can't understand. It's unintelligible. Saeed arrives, and Walt, of course, is gone, but Saeed knows that Shannon had seen something and asks her what. So then we're back with Kate and Locke are walking through the jungle, and she asks him, why does he want to go down there so bad? And he corrects her, saying, Lee.
Yeah, he does.
I do love that. It's a good, I mean, it's a good little deflection, too, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily want to answer this question, so I'm going to...
Correct your grammar. Mm-hmm. So Locke says Jack thinks he's crazy, doesn't he? And Kate replies with, because you want to drop into a hatch that has been locked from the inside by a foot-thick steel door that says quarantine.
Yeah.
I mean, that does sound crazy.
Yeah, it does. But mm-hmm. then he replies with, 5 hours ago, he was pulled into a hole by a column of black smoke and asks if she saw it. And she just kind of nods and replies, well, I guess we're both crazy.
Yeah, and I also love what he says right after that is, I wonder what Jack thinks he saw.
Right.
Because it's like,
you're being the man of science.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Right. How's he deciphering that? Because we all know he saw it. Everybody saw it.
And so Jack and Hurley are, you know, kind of walking behind them. And Hurley asks if, or tells Jack he should go ahead because Locke is making time with his girl.
That's fucking great.
And says it was a joke when he sees that Jack isn't laughing. And Jack says he isn't in the mood for humor. And Hurley says, usually you're Mr. Ha Ha.
That makes Jack laugh.
Yep. And so Jack then asks Hurley about the numbers and why he said they were bad. Hurley says, it's a long story. And Jack says, well, we got time. Well, stuck on an island here. So Hurley says he was in a psych ward with Leonard, who was constantly repeating the numbers over and over. And a couple of months after he got out, he played the numbers while buying a frozen burrito and won $114 million. And after that, his grandpa died, his house caught on fire, and the chicken joint he worked in got hit by a meteor. Well, he said meteorite after he corrected himself. And he said he tried to stop Locke because he saw the exact same numbers written on the side of the hatch, and those numbers are cursed. And all Jack says is, so you were in a psych ward?
I was so pissed.
I know. I was like, I was expecting something else.
Yeah.
Something
I'm like, more. Out of all of the information that you just got, that's your fucking response?
Yeah. Well, it's a
setup.
And
that upset Hurley, too.
It's a, that's why. It's a setup so that Hurley can talk about his bedside manner not being good, so it feeds into the rest of the show. But
he just wanted Jack to believe him, but Jack says they're numbers. And then Hurley says that Jack's bedside manner sucks, dude.
Yeah, so still, the only person that's ever given Hurley any validation has been Danielle.
Yep.
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 So after he says that, we go to the second flashback, and Jack is standing at the foot of his future ex-wife's bed, and she wakes up asking what happened to the other driver.
And here is where I have in my notes, I guess I didn't notice it until now, but I was just like, what's with the fucking bangs?
I just thought when I read the first scene in the ER, the hair was just like, oh, God. Drawn to it. Yeah. I was like, Jesus.
Drawn to it. Oh, shit. So, yeah, anyways. So
Jack tells her he died in the ER, that he died in the ER, and she says she can't feel anything, and he says, I know. She asks what happened, and he tells her that her spine was fractured and has multiple crushed vertebrae, and that her spleen is ruptured and bleeding into her abdomen. He says he's going to try to repair as much as possible, but tells her it's extremely unlikely that she will regain feeling below the waist. She says, oh. And then Christian walks in addressing Jack as Dr. Shepherd and asks for a word. So they go out into the hallway, and Jack asks, what did he do wrong? Because Christian is frowning. Who replies, well, his face is always that way. You know, people used to say, accuse my dad of that.
Resting bitch face.
See, my dad had that because, like, when my friends would meet him when I was, like, really young, they says, your dad pissed about something? It was just,
no that's just his face.
Yeah. My dad, tell my dad that. He's, what am I supposed to do? Walk around with a fucking smile all day? With a big old grin? Yeah.
No, because then that's even creepier. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So he tells Jack that he should try handing out some hope every once in a while, because that even if they're 99% screwed, they'll still want to hear that 1% chance that things are going to be okay.
See, for me, I disagree with that. I understand the plot and that Christian's probably right. But for me, I would have, if it was me, I would have wanted Jack to just give me the details just like that. Just
yeah,
give
see,
it to
when
me.
I was younger.
Don't dole out hope, false hope.
Right, exactly. See, my mother, she had a bone marrow transplant in 1989, and she told me that she had a 95% chance to live, when in reality, it was the other way around. And but she knew that herself. The doctor had told her, you only got a 5% chance.
And how old were you?
14.
Ooh.
We spent 3 months in Houston living across the hospital from MD Anderson, because she had to stay in isolation for 27 days.
Wow, just to avoid infection?
Yeah, radiated everything. Yeah, back then, it was experimental still, because they kill your immune system.
Yeah.
Right.
You have zero immune system.
And it worked. That's the...
It did. It gave her 20 more years. Yeah. So.
Wow. Well, Christy, you had brain surgery. How did your doctor talk to you?
My doctor had an incredible bedside manner.
Really?
Okay. I liked him the moment that I met him. I don't want this to sound mean, but he looked like Luigi. Except he's Cuban.
Oh wow, I can picture it then.
Yeah, so he's a not a terribly tall man, and he's gray, and he's got this big bushy mustache
and a green hat. It says L on it.
maybe his surgical cap was green, I don't know.
Probably.
But we went over, you know, what the problems were, and he made me very at ease, and he made me feel like the day of surgery was going to be just another day at the office for him, but in the least arrogant way possible.
Wow. So. Yeah. I mean, that does sound like good bedside manner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he did. I mean, he gave you the stats. I mean, he said like one side effect of brain surgery could be death, right? Like
Well, yeah, that's any surgery.
Well, any anesthesia,
I got an MRI, I had to sign something saying that liquid they inject you with for the, you know, to make it show up could kill
contrast.
You.
Contrast. Yeah, it's called contrast.
That's it.
Contrast
dye.
I read that. I was like, wow, this stuff can kill me. Okay, here, sign.
Yeah, I go through like a 2 hour, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hour MRI at least once a year.
I've had three and I don't like them.
It's weird.
Stuck in that thing. Yeah, it is weird. Yeah.
The worst part is when they put the mask over your face and like strap you, like bolt you in. That I don't like that feeling, but whatever. Yeah. They give me some kind of
probably Xanax.
Back to Lost.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So Jack says her spine is crushed, and telling her that there is a chance is false, but Christian says maybe, but there's still hope. Yeah, I don't like that either, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
So well, back on the island.
Do we notice that we're at a point where there's, you know, one of the things Locke had said earlier was that inside that hatch was Hope. And now we have, oh, you can't get into the hatch or whatever. But then within this flashback, we basically have Christian saying the same thing. All these other things aside, you have to have, you know, you have to have Hope.
Yep.
So I think he's sort of like a reflection of Locke right now.
Well, and that's interesting. Kind of a theme throughout the whole thing when, like Saeed was talking to the group and saying, let's not tell them about the transmittal that we heard from the French woman because Hope is a very bad thing to lose or something like that.
Yeah, you're right.
Don't give
I don't know what a transmittal
hope.
Is, though. Is that a word? You mean transmission?
Transmission. Sorry.
Well, you said transmittal. I like that.
I think transmit. No, I believe transmittal actually is a word.
It is.
To transmit is a transmittal. Yeah, I guess that's. I guess
well,
that makes
we have these things that we one of the forms we have to fill out when dealing with the MVA. It's called a transmittal sheet, and you write up all the information on it and give it to them with the paperwork.
Oh, fine. Then.
Like a TPS report.
Oh my God.
So back on the island, Shannon is telling everyone that she heard whispers in the jungle, but Saeed tells her to be quiet. Sun asks if she thinks something happened to the raft, and Saeed says Walt is on the raft with Jin, but Shannon insists that she knows what she saw. So Jack and the Dynamite crew return, and Jack tells them, after a long pause of them just looking at him, that Locke found a hatch in the ground about a half mile from the caves and that they blew it open for all of them to hide inside. But he says there isn't a way to get everyone in there tonight. And then that's when Charlie asks where Dr. Arts is. And Jack just says, he didn't make it.
He's all over
piece
the place.
On my shoulder.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was
he's
gonna
all
say.
He's all
he's
around
He's everywhere.
Us.
Yes. And so Shannon asks if they saw the others, and Charlie yells at her. And Jack says, hey, you know, after the crowd is kind of getting out of control and they all look at him again, he says, everything is going to be okay and that they're staying at the caves together and that they have four guns and they'll put lookouts everywhere and they'll be safe as long as they stay together. He promises that they'll see the sunrise in 3 hours. And so his bedside manner is getting a little better,
exactly.
I guess.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but Locke, he doesn't care about all that. He's gathering up the cable and tells Jack he's going into the hatch.
I love how he does it like in front of everybody too. He doesn't go like, I'll go talk to Jack personally after this. Say, hey, I'm gonna go do that. It's like, they're like two stags again at this point. He's like, I'm going to do this and I'm putting everyone on notice that I don't think that the way that you're doing it, Jack, is right. So like when he said earlier and he was going to stay there and Jack said, well, you should come back. And he finally goes, okay. I think he had planned it the entire time. Like he was going to come back here and
he's getting in that hatch.
Yeah,
he is getting in
and
there.
He was going to tell everybody he was going.
Yeah, I agree that when he acquiesced, it was because he was just going to go back anyways after grabbing some supplies. But I don't think that it was a way to make Jack look bad. I don't think that's what Locke is concerned with. I think Locke was more like, that's fine. I'll go back with you now. I won't cause a fuss, but I am on my own journey. And so I'm going to go do this. I don't think he's trying to make Jack look bad.
I think he's trying to give everybody there a choice to take whatever they want to do, to do what they want to do.
Well, yeah, I could agree with that. Yeah, he's doing it publicly because he hopes that someone will follow, which,
which happens. We see. Yeah, ends up happening. Yep.
So Jack asks Locke, is that the smartest thing to do right now? And Locke says, I doubt it, but he is tired of waiting for the others or others to show up or the raft to get help, and he leaves. So Kate and Jack have some alone time, and they're talking, and Kate tells him he did a good thing with his speech, but she is going to the hatch because she can't let Locke go by himself.
I'm with Kate. I want in the hatch. I want to go in the hatch. Yeah. Let me in
too,
the hatch.
Me too. I mean, they went through all this effort and trouble to get in there, so let's get in there.
Yeah.
So we're in the third flashback of the episode.
Actually, I want to say something that happened here, because when Jack is sort of like, why are you going to follow Locke? She says, she repeats something that he had said earlier, that live together, die alone.
Yep. So she used this quote.
Yeah. Kind of like giving Jack some of his own medicine.
Hey.
So in the flashback, Jack is in his office talking to what we learn is the fiance of his future ex-wife, telling him he doesn't know how extensive the damage is until he performs surgery. The fiance tells Jack the wedding is in 8 months, and Jack says, I'm sure Sarah will have recovered by then. It's the first time he used her name in this episode. And the fiance asks, recover from what? And Jack says, there will be a lot of physical therapy. And then, total douchebag, fiance asks if she will be able to make love. And Jack says she may need professional care for the rest of her life. And the dumbass fiance asks, she won't be able to go to the bathroom by herself?
Yeah, no,
and Jack
she's
just kind of sits
dipshit.
Back into his chair.
Just get her a sex
Jack's
swing.
Like, what the hell?
Sex I just swing some lube. You can work that out. Julie Bowen with that kind of like bow hunk dude.
Oh, yeah. He was gross.
Yeah. I don't see the two of them together at all in my head. Can't. It doesn't work.
Well, obviously, it doesn't work on the show either.
Good casting.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this guy, you can see it coming, right? I mean,
Oh, God. He looks like a total douche.
Just in every subtle little way, you know that this guy's like, no, I'm leaving her. I'm done. Yeah. I'm not doing this.
She can't make love. I'm done.
I mean, not to say, like, those are real issues. This does happen to couples where someone is injured and it's life-changing. And, like, I mean, the things that he's thinking are real things and real challenges and stuff like that. So I don't want to take away from that, but you can just
that early
tell
in the game.
By the way it was, but by the way that it was written and acted, you can tell that he's just like, I'm bailing. I'm bailing on
I'm gonna
this.
Go, yeah. I'm going to go jump into my Audi and
yeah.
I'm out. Yeah.
I'm going to make like a tree and leave.
Yeah.
Oh, Ben, she's stealing your thunder.
Wow. Take like a baby and head on out.
Exactly.
What? All right. Woo. Hey, Ben.
Yeah, babe.
Got any special occasions coming up that you need a card for?
Is this a trick question?
No, it's an advertisement.
Is this about barbcards.com again?
Bingo.
So I suppose you're going to remind me that each handmade card is only $1.50.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't come with busy backgrounds or flowery poetry?
You got it. Barbcards.com offers to-the-point communication within several different categories, including our favorite, potty mouth. And if you can't find what you want, barbcards.com can do customizations.
Can I still get all of my cards for no more than $4 shipping, no matter the size of the order?
You know it. Barbcards.com has got all you need. Hey, Ben.
Oh, my God. What are we selling now?
Merch.
Our merch?
Yes, sir. Shirts, coffee mugs, wine tumblers, bottle openers, stickers, magnets, and more. Your choice of product and your choice of Space Bear Media graphic from any of our podcasts.
Please tell me we're not making merch now, too.
Of course not. We'll stick to podcasts and Pixis products will do the rest.
Thank God. I bet you have more to say, though.
Sure do. Pixis Products is a small business run by a local mom, well, local to us anyway, who needed something else to do besides being a snack bitch.
A what?
A snack bitch, also known as a mom with a young child.
There's still more, isn't there?
Yippers! Pixis Products works with other small businesses for supplies, art, and other collaborations at every opportunity, including ours. In fact, Pixis Products even gave Space Bear Media our own storefront on their site. You can find us at shopspacebear.com.
Say what?
You heard me. Go to shopspacebear.com and buy something.
So the scene cuts to Jack. He's prepping for surgery and Sarah's laying on the table and she tells Jack to come over. And she's going to tell him a little secret. And she keeps getting Jack to come closer and closer. And she tells him that it is okay. And that she knows this isn't going to, she isn't going to be dancing anymore, but she can still roll around in her bedding, I think is what she said.
No, she said, I can roll around at my wedding.
Oh, roll around. Okay.
Instead of dancing. Yeah, yeah. She was making a roll around
right,
joke.
Exactly. Lock. Yeah. But he tells her he's going to fix her, and she closes her eyes, and he kind of staying there a long time. He looks up. There's one of these nurses, like, it's like wide-eyed, just staring at him.
I'm going to send you guys a message. I just sent it on Facebook Messenger, because when I saw the nurse, I immediately thought of something else. So I sent you a picture of the nurse and a picture of
the one that's with the wise eyes, like, wide open. Oh, yeah, there it is.
It's the alien from Mars Attacks. Yes. Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
Maybe when we do the pre-show for YouTube, we can actually put the pictures up for them.
Put that up there? Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
Oh, that's so you guys funny. You should rewatch that scene. There was something that I noticed, and again, it was probably because I was watching it on a big-ass TV, but there is a super, super long eyebrow on Jack's right eye that just did not get plucked. And it is out there. It's like he looks like one of those like deep sea angler fish.
You get those.
Oh yeah, with the antenna. Yeah,
with the antenna with a light on it. Yeah,
you get those, Ben. I have to pull those off your face from time to time.
I do.
It's weird how they get so long, and then I just notice. Yeah. Yeah. And then one day I'm looking at him, and I'm like, Jesus, Ben, there's like a 2-inch hair coming out of your face.
I have one that grows out, but it's like so right in the thin middle. And so pale, you don't even see it until it's literally like an inch long.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Ben's aren't pale. They're pretty thick and hairy.
Bushy.
Luxurious. Luxurious is the word I like to use.
Luxurious eyebrows. Oh, boy.
So back on the island, Locke is fashioning the cables into a harness to go down into the hatch when Kate arrives. She says she was expecting him to be halfway down by now, and he replies he was waiting for her.
I love
it. He grins and turns around to look at her.
Yeah, I love it. He knew. That's who he was acting for, was Kate.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So he decides that she should go down first because she's lighter, and so she's preparing to be lowered in the hatch.
And I'm gonna go back to this because this I found really, really funny. Kate actually says, I'll go down first.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'm totally down with that. But then Locke says, the further down you go, the shaft might get narrower.
Hey.
And I was like, wow, you guys are both of those things. Did somebody not catch that during one of their edits? I don't
know. Well, maybe they didn't.
She also says he wants to see if she gets eaten.
She does.
There's a little
and down there at the bottom of the hatch were the four of us ready to eat her.
So she asks him, what should she say if she wants him to stop? And he just looks at her and says, stop. So she's getting lowered down into the hatch with dramatic music. And the tree that was being used as leverage snaps, causing Kate to drop further into the shaft. And Locke to be pulled with her and just destroying his hands, too.
Oh, yeah, that would fucking hurt.
Oh, God, that was painful just looking at it. And then her fall is stopped by Locke, bracing against the hatch, but she drops her flashlight. She says she's okay and maybe starts to say probably to pull her up, but nope, Locke just continues lowering her.
That pissed me off so much.
Yeah, he was determined to find out what's in that hatch.
Yeah, he did not give a shit about her. He wanted to know what was in the hatch.
He wanted the shaft to get narrow and her to get eaten.
Mm-hmm. And she actually did, like, from Jack's thing that he had talked about her last year when he said, like, you know, when I'm afraid, I count to four. She did that same thing.
Well, yeah, she starts counting. She does the 1, 2, 3, 4 like Jack did earlier.
And she does it quiet. And she does it out loud, but it's still
real quiet. But then yells, stop. When she sees the light at the bottom of the shaft go away, and it sounded like a door was squeaking shut.
Yeah.
She yells that she thinks there's something down there when all of a sudden this super bright light fills the shaft. And Locke's still holding on to the rope with his bloody hands, and but he's, you know, he's like gazing into the light, like, wow.
Oh, it's, yeah, he's mesmerized by the whole situation.
Yeah, he's like mesmerized. And yeah, he asks Kate if she's all right, and then something just pulls hard as hell on the rope, and he's pulling back, and then all of a sudden it slacks, goes limp, and Locke falls back while the light turns off. And then he's just staring down into the hatch, screaming out Kate's name.
Yeah.
So back at the caves, Jack is loading a gun when Hurley comes up asking if he is going back and what happened to waiting until the sunrise, which Jack says, I changed my mind.
Translation, Kate left me.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could give a shit about Locke going, but Kate goes, he's going.
I hate to see you go, but I love to watch you leave.
Oh, my God.
So he arrives at the hatch where the only thing there are the torches. And he looks down into the hatch and calls for Kate and Locke, but gets no response. And he throws a torch down the shaft, which, you know, because they got so many torches.
They got plenty to spare, yeah.
Yeah. Then he smartly wraps his hands with cloth and goes into the hatch himself. And then he stops, and the music gets louder and louder and louder, and then we cut to the fourth flashback. And Jack is running up and down the stairs in a large stadium, and then you see another guy doing the same thing one section over.
How did he get into the stadium?
The other guy?
How did either of them, who lets you go into a stadium in the middle of the night? Do they not have, like, rules about people not being on a stadium property after
I don't know. I imagined that Jack worked at a university and somehow then
that's
had
what
access
I was thinking. It's a
the
university
stadium. That's
so he's,
the only
he's
thing
got some
that
kind of
side sense
deal with like the night security guy or something. He just lets him in.
Yeah.
I'll give you free surgery if you let me in the stadium.
Okay. So how does this other guy show up there?
Well,
he's not a doctor.
He's in a race around the world.
Yeah.
I want to get in here too, brother.
So they appear to be racing each other when Jack falls and twists his ankle. The unknown man comes over and says, "You all right, brother?" in a Scottish accent. And Jack says he is fine. He is examining Jack's ankle and says it isn't sprained. And Jack asks, what does he know about sprains? And the Scottish guy says he was almost a doctor once. And Jack says, well, it's a small world. And the man offers Jack some water and asks, why is he running like the devil was chasing him? And the man said, before Jack can answer, says his excuse is he's training for a race around the world. And Jack says he's just trying to work a few things out. And the Scottish guy says, a girl, right? And Jack says, a patient. And he goes, a girl patient.
He knows what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows. So Jack says her name is Sarah. And he asks, well, what did you do to her worthy of this self-flagellation? Flagellation, like that word. Jack says that he made her a promise he couldn't keep, that he couldn't fix her, and that he failed. And the guy asks, well, what if you did fix her? And Jack says he didn't.
Brother.
Brother.
What if you did fix her? Brother.
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 Jack says, for Sarah to be fixed, it would take a miracle, brother. To which the guy says, you don't believe in miracles? And Jack shakes his head, and the guy tells Jack that he has to lift it up. And Jack asked, lift what up? And the guy says, his ankle. Jack introduces himself, and the guy introduces himself, and we find out he is named Desmond.
Have you noticed, like, in this scene, for as much heavy breathing as Jack does normally, for doing this, tour de estade or whatever he's doing, he's not breathing very hard for, like, running his ass up. Both of them were, like, going, and then they, you know, they're for about the first 10 seconds.
Younger,
then after
so
that, they're
maybe
just
he was in better shape.
Still. Yeah.
There you go.
And his
this
wig
was a few
was,
years
you know,
ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wig that wasn't properly secured to his head was, like, flapping.
Yeah, it was giving him that cool.
So he tells Jack, Desmond tells Jack, good luck, and I'll see you in another life. So, back at the bottom of the hatch, Jack picks up the flashlight and looks around. He sees a mirror in the source of the bright light and starts walking down a damp tunnel with a bunch of old leaky pipes. He takes out his gun finally, you know, I would have taken it out as soon as I got to the bottom of the hatch, and sees a pair of tennis shoes and an electrical box. And the place kind of looks like an old bunker, and he sees a wall that looks like someone had been painting on it with the old paint cans and supplies still there in front of it. Then he's like looking through this door that looks like it's been like partially opened or damaged. And then the key that he has around his neck starts being drawn towards it. And then one of the mirrors starts to move and the Mamas and Papas song from the beginning of the episode starts playing loudly. And then there's a loud bang and the bright light comes on again. But Jack moves into another hall and walks into a large domed shaped room with very old computer equipment. They even had the old tape reel.
Yeah.
I'm
going to go back when he was actually in the hallway and then you see that, you know, his key starts like moving towards that, because like they actually kind of slightly show through the wall a little bit. They kind of hint that there's something back there. And this is one of the first times that I think like the purpose of whatever this is, you start to kind of see it a little bit and we don't know exactly what it's doing.
Obviously something magnetic.
There's something electromagnetic going on there, which is like our first hint to that of the something else going on.
Well, I want to also point out
the bunker
that all over the walls, in addition to just slash marks, I guess, marking how many days he was there. The number 108 is featured a couple times, I think. And that's what you get if you add up 4, 8, 15, 16, 23, 42.
There you go.
It also will come up in the next few episodes what the significance of 108 pops up. Yeah.
So Jack is surrounded by this ancient computer equipment, and the computer in the center of the room has that same DOS prompt as at the beginning of the episode. And it is for some reason Jack is about to just press the execute button when the music stops and Locke says, "I wouldn't do that." And Jack asks, "Where's Kate?" You know, didn't ask if Locke's okay. He says, "Where's Kate?"
Oh, no, just "Where's Kate?" He's like, "Fuck you, Locke."
Yeah, Locke is resourceful. Yeah. He's going to be fine.
Yeah, he knows. And so he points the gun at Locke when an arm appears and points another gun at Locke's chin. And then we cut to the fifth and final flashback of the episode. And Jack is sitting in a chair.
I cried. This one makes me cry.
Yeah.
Jack is sitting in a chair in Sarah's room when she wakes up and asks if she is alive. Good question to ask, I guess. He pulls a chair over by her bed and she says he smells and that he really smells. He says he went for a run. I think that's what he says, a tour of the stadia. And she said that he smells like he ran far. So he wanted to check. He said he, you know, showered, but I guess it didn't work. And he wanted to check on her and that he ran every step up and down in the stadium. And she asked, well, why would he do that? He said he's intense. But he didn't finish because he hurt his ankle. She asks if Kevin, her fiance, so we finally find out the douchebag's name, Kevin.
Kevin Nations, probably.
Yeah,
probably. Randy or
Randy's brother.
Yeah, exactly.
And asks if he is there, but Jack says he didn't see him. But
like,
she's
are you
sure
fucking
that
kidding
he
me? Are you fucking kidding me? Like, Ben, if you were in spinal surgery, I would be glued to the hospital. There's no way I would go anywhere. That's fucking crazy. Fuck this guy.
He left in his Audi, like Ben said.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. If it were the fall and you needed to get a pumpkin spice latte, I can imagine you getting pulled away.
I mean, the coffee shop be in the hospital, though.
Yeah.
Sure. Would it have a Starbucks latte, though?
I'd still be in the hospital.
Okay.
I do like the pumpkin spice, though. That's true.
You do.
I'm a, what do they call that? A basic bitch.
You know what? If you enjoy pumpkin spice, then I'm happy for you.
Oh.
People need to stop yucking other people's yums.
Hmm. That should be on a t-shirt.
Yucking other people's yums.
No, just like, don't yuck my yum.
I'm sure that it is somewhere, but we could make one. We could make one for Space Bear Media.
Don't yuck my yum.
Done.
Yeah, that's elemental and awesome. I think we should do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't yuck my yum. Coming soon.
Yeah.
Hashtag.
Actually, we're recording this early, so available now.
Available now. Available at concessions everywhere.
SpaceBearMedia.com. Get your merch.
So Jack said he didn't see Kevin, but she says, "Oh, I'm sure he'll be back," and Jack agrees. Delusional.
She knows. Jack knows what's up. He's just trying to be nice and protect her from it.
She knows what's up.
He's improving his bedside manner, giving her hope where there isn't any hope. She asks how the surgery went, and Jack says the damage was extensive, and he did everything he could, but her spinal column couldn't be fixed. He tells her that she'll be paralyzed from the waist down for the rest of her life, and he tells her he is very sorry when she says, "Are you yanking my chain?" And he says, "No." And she asks, "Then how can she wiggle her toes?" And then Jack looks over, and you can see her toes wiggling. And yeah, this was a really good scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm already crying. I started crying. Yeah,
So he takes out a pin and starts poking her lower legs, asking if she can feel it. And she says yes to everywhere he is poking. And then
how about this, darling? You feel this?
Yeah. Feel this? Can you? That's not your pin. Is that that's not your pin, doctor? No, it's a pin 15.
Wow, this storyline just took a porno turn.
Wait, now he was doing this with a pen. Did Boone show up and give him that pen? This entire scene would not have been possible were Boone not there.
Oh my God! All right, so.
So, I mean,
do you know what this scene actually reminds me of? It reminds me of, and this is probably a pretty show that most people haven't seen, but it reminds me of John from Cincinnati.
Oh, that's a good show.
Haven't seen it.
If you guys have never watched that, it was only one season, and it's a strange show, but it's David Milch who did Deadwood, and it's a really, really crazy cool show.
It's like Deadwood. It's a dialogue heavy show. It's all about the characters and the insane things that they say, and it also has Ed O'Neill. I couldn't remember his name for a second.
Oh yeah, Ed O'Neill's great in that.
Al Bundy,
fucking hilarious in that show.
Amazing. Yeah, and isn't that weird? Because it's funny that's coming up now because in just a few episodes we're gonna see Peggy Bundy Bundy, I guess is what she goes
really?
By.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You haven't gotten there yet.
No.
I only earmuffs? Watched the
episodes that were recorded.
Yeah. Earmuffs? Yeah. Yeah.
Earmuffs?
A little late.
Yeah, so sorry. Anywho.
While Jack is poking Sarah, they're smiling, laughing, and crying all at the same time. It was a really good scene because he fixed her.
Yeah, I noted after they both cry together, I noted, to be fair, I cried too. Also, she has perfect teeth.
Yeah, she does have perfect teeth. That's right. Yeah. Some orthodontist is responsible for that. They don't come that perfect. Right. Yeah, in this scene, I mean, you can see the beginnings of their relationship. Obviously, like, Kevin is gone, and you can see how this moment brings them together, probably pushing the boundaries of doctor-patient, which we know then get crossed later.
Yep. So back in the hatch or the bunker, whatever, the showdown continues between Jack, Locke, and the unknown gunman, who says, "Move and I'll kill him," in a strangely familiar Scottish accent.
Yeah. So did you notice right away? I was wondering, like,
yes.
I knew before Jack knew, right? It. Yeah.
Okay. Right. So Jack asks, "Where is Kate?" Of course. And Locke says, "She's fine," and to put the gun down. The gunman shoots around into the ceiling and says, "Do you want him to die? Put it down." Jack
and
asks
Jack's
Locke,
like, I mean, maybe.
Well, Jack, yeah. So Jack asks Locke, "Is this what you were talking about? Is this your destiny? All roads lead here." And the gunman then moves position and gets behind Locke and says, "Lower your gun or I'll blow his damn head off, brother." And I was like, oh shit, Jack's going to know. And he's revealed to be... He's revealed to be Desmond, and Jack says, "You," and the episode
with the crazy eyes
ends. That's the awesome episode. Man, that was a good episode.
And the bookends, the opening with the I had goosebumps all over me. The opening of the hatch, and then the ending where you're like, "Wait, whose fucking destiny is this?"
Right. Yeah, because when I rewatched it last night to do my outline, you know, I was like, man, the same things, you know, like you said, goosebumps.
I was like,
holy crap.
I found it funny in this scene that Jack actually like took the effort to chastise Locke, you know, like, oh, this is your destiny, where he's in the middle of a situation, like, Mexican standoff.
I mean, they'd been building up, they'd been having the conflicts through the whole episode, through the whole show thus far.
Sure.
But I think it was to tie a bow nicely onto, like, make sure you understand that Jack doesn't believe in destiny right before the moment that he goes, wait, what the fuck is this? And
yeah. it's true.
The you know what I mean? It's called Man of Science, Man of Faith.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, first fun facts of the season. Desmond talks about that he was going to be in a race around the world. So I looked up whether or not that's a real thing. It is. I
didn't know that.
Yeah, so I found something called the Circumpolar Race Around the World. For short, it goes by CRAW, acronym CRAW. You can find the website at craw.racing. So it is organized into regions of the planet, and you also compete in teams, and you have like a set number for each team, and it's you kind of like relay across the world, essentially. And so what you have to imagine is if you take the classic globe and you lay it on its side, it makes a new equator, and this equator passes through both of the North and the South Poles. But the trip is 80% on land. So that's where the race goes. So let me tell you.
It's hard to run on water.
Well, but so.
Got it. I understand. Yeah.
In the race, there are a total of. And if you go to the website, you can see it. They have it drawn out there. So craw.racing. But they have a total of 8 flights and 6 ferries to get around the planet when 80% of it is on land. So here are the categories. It is a total traveled time without the flights and the ferries is 30,167 miles. You add another 36,825 miles with the flights and the ferries. So it's separated by regions, and the competition starts in Latin America. And roughly 2,500 miles in Latin America, you pass through Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and Panama. Then you move into the second region, which is called the Andes, and you go through Colombia, Ecuador, and Peru. And then somebody can help me with this word. They call it the Pampas, P-A-M-P-A-S, and they say it's included with Chile and Argentina. Is that is that a word that any of you recognize?
I mean, I've heard of it. It's like a region in South America, I think. Yeah. Pampas. I think
so
it's like
so. It must have. Yeah. It must consist of Chile.
It's
and
not
Argentina,
the mountains.
Then.
You know, it's not the mountain part. Yeah.
Right. The Andes, which was the one right before that. Sure. Right. Okay.
It's so fertile South American lowlands that cover more than 1,200,000 square kilometers.
That's a pretty big area. Okay.
So that probably includes like Patagonia, then down at the.
Speaking of Costa Rica, Ben, my Facebook's coming back 8 years ago when we were there.
Were we in Costa Rica?
Long already.
Yeah.
Man.
So it covers part of Argentina.
I don't think Patagonia is included. It's like Patagonia is not particularly fertile.
Oh, I see. And this one was, got it. So the next region is Antarctica. It doesn't have anything listed because there are no countries there in Antarctica. And I'm not sure how much of it they fly over either there. Then it goes down under Australia, the islands. They have listed as Indonesia, the Malay Peninsula, where you go through Malaysia, Thailand, Myanmar. And then it has Indian subcontinent and you go through India and Bangladesh. And then region 9 is the Stans, and you go through Pakistan, Afghanistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Kazakhstan. And then you make your way into Europe through Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, Latvia, Estonia, Finland, Sweden, Norway. The 11th region is the Great White North, and it's Canada and Alaska. And then you zoom on down through the lower 48 through the United States until you hit Mexico and you're back. And that is how you race around the world. And if you go to this website, it was craw.racing. I think it, what I saw is their next race starts in 2022. And
how long does it take? Like, what do they tell you? Like, how long the average runner or racer takes?
You know what? I don't know. That info might be on there, but I don't have it on the thing that I printed out here. I'm not really sure. And I guess it depends, like, because some, it appeared that, like, you could work in teams and that the team itself through a region could be a relay, and then you relay off to another team through a region. So I'm not sure how long any one individual person would race, but I think it might be subjective to the team. So anyways, you guys want to race around the world?
No.
Christine,
that's why I have miles.
I did apply for that amazing race, that show.
Me and my friend,
we made a video and everything. I'd love to have been on that thing. I just never sent the video in though, like a dumbass.
I would do that. I would do the amazing race.
We just got lazy.
Yeah. Oh my God. You want to run around the world, but you're too lazy to send the video.
Really, they don't really run around the world there. You drive and fly mostly.
Yeah,
they do a lot of that. I've seen that show. It's great. I would totally be on that show. That would be fun. I don't know if it's still a thing because I don't watch network TV anymore.
I think it's still on. I think it is. Ads for it.
Yeah.
Well, Survivor's still on, right?
God.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Never understood that
show. I saw
the
first season and that was it.
No, I loved it. I watched through probably a good...
Richard Hatch.
Yes. That guy's a dick. That was the original winner. Yep. All right. Anywho.
No, you like The Bachelor. I know.
Me?
Don't yuck my yums.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I have watched a couple seasons of The Bachelor, but you know when I go through like periods of depression and I can't get off the couch and I just need something to like pacify my brain, I'll put on trashy TV like The Bachelor. I wouldn't call it my yum, but
it's like your spiritual Taco Bell. I mean,
the one that I liked was called
Yes, you're right. It is my spiritual
the one I
Taco
liked,
Bell.
That was that kind of show. It was called Joe Millionaire, where the guy was like pretending to be a millionaire, but he was
not
a construction worker. It was awesome.
Oh, I remember
loved
that.
It.
All these dumb coozes trying to buy for his attention.
God, he's so rich.
You dirty legs.
Because it was
fuck
like,
you.
Who wants to marry a millionaire? Oh my God.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Shall we talk about episode one? Man of Science, Man of Faith.
Let's do
it. How about, Christy, what was your best and worst moments of this episode?
The best moment was when Sarah revealed that she could wiggle her toes.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the worst moment was when Jack was talking to Hurley and he said, you were in a psych ward. It really pissed me off that was the thing that he focused on out of all of the things that Hurley said.
Yep. Well,
I'd have been like, you won
$114
million?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, wait, what?
That's what I would have said. It's like, ugh.
Well, what were your best and worst moments, Derek?
My best moment was the same as Christie's, whenever Sarah learned that she wasn't paralyzed, and Jack and that whole interaction. But the worst moment for me was Shannon losing Vincent. How do you lose a dog? I mean,
she's just terrible.
Yeah.
Ben, how about you?
I mean, my favorite moment was when Jack realizes that it was Desmond and he just says, you.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
That was a good
moment.
One too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The worst moment was when the first time you see Jack in that wig.
Oh, God.
Oh,
I have a feeling that wig might be killed this episode.
It could happen. Very, very, it could happen.
All right. For me, the best moment is when you realize you're inside of the hatch. And the worst moment, I don't know why this one was for me, it was when Sarah was in the operating room and she has Jack bend over and she absolves him of not fixing her. Because to me, it was like she had resigned to the idea of like, okay, I'm going to be paralyzed. Like, I'm going through the motions. I have to do this surgery, but it's not going to work. And it just felt like a sad moment to me.
Mm-hmm.
1%.
Yeah. So, how about best and worst characters in fucking kill? Ben, what do you got for us?
I mean, my best character was Jack. He, he was typical Jack. Like, he did a lot of... He did a lot of like leading in this episode. And I think he in many ways he was trying to, do what was best for the group, where Locke's ambition seemed a bit more sort of focused on Locke and sort of like his personal destiny. So I think Jack sort of putting the rest of the folks before himself, I really like. The worst character was his wig again.
It was a bad wig.
It was a really bad wig.
Oh my god, that's amazing. All right.
Either that or his errant eyebrow.
Christy, how about you? Oh wait. Who was your worst character, Ben?
Jack's wig.
Oh, that was the worst character. Oh, sorry. Then who did you fucking kill?
Oh, I fucked Kate because, I mean, she was going months. Down the shaft. She was going down the shaft. So, you know, whatever. She goes down first. So I felt like she was inviting me.
You're ready to eat her.
Yeah. For kill, nothing. I mean, I would kill Jack's wig, but I already called it my worst character and my worst scene. So it seems like a bit of overkill to do it three times.
All right. Christy, how about you?
My top character is Jack. You know, that one's just a given. Bottom character, Sarah's fiance, Kevin. Fuck that mm-hmm. guy.
Fuck that guy.
You mean make love?
Oh, no. Yeah. I'm actually not going to fuck anybody this episode.
Really?
And I'm going to kill
Jack. Wasn't sexy. Well, really wasn't a sexy episode.
Yeah, it was not a sexy episode.
No.
And who did you say you were killing? I didn't hear you.
Jack's wig. It's legit just bad.
I knew someone was gonna kill that thing.
Dude, yeah.
Derek, what do you got?
My best is Jack because he did everything right this episode. And my worst is Kevin. I mean, just from the moment that guy sat down, I knew he was going to be a total loser. And so I'm going to kill him too.
Okay.
He's dead in his Audi. And I'm going to fuck Kate. Just because it's been a couple months.
So
yeah, there really wasn't much sexy in this episode.
Yeah, not a lot of sexy.
I'm going to defer from the rest of you. And my top character is Locke. I am on board with him being so determined to get into the hatch because as a viewer, I am as well. And so his discarding of other people's feelings and things like that. I don't know. I'm forgiving it just because I have that strong of an urge to get into the hatch as well. And so I'm on Locke's side.
He's disregarding the safety of Kate. Like he's disregarding her life.
No, I get it. I understand. Yeah. I understand
but
what I'm saying.
He originally went by himself. Kate came afterward.
He was waiting for her. He knew.
He was waiting.
Yeah, he knew.
Yeah.
Worst character is Kevin. Fuck that guy.
Yep.
I am
love.
Speaking.
I'm going to tell
speaking
you
of fucking.
Love.
I do have somebody I'm fucking this week. Desmond, brother.
Oh.
Cause like yeah.
Is it the accent?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's the accent.
I like Scottish accents.
I do too. It's great. So I'm killing Shannon because she lost the fucking dog again.
Yeah, I feel like I dropped the ball. I should have killed her.
She was my second worst character because of that. Kevin's just so douchey that, you know.
Well, you have a moment, Ben. I'm going to ask you for where we are after this episode. If you want to add Shannon, kill her real quick. Go ahead.
No, I feel like I made my decision. I will stick with it. I didn't kill anyone this episode.
All right. Well, can you tell us who are top and bottom three so far this season?
Yes, I can. Our top is tied right now. We've got both Jack and Kate at 15 points. Locke in second place with 5 and Desmond in third place with 3. The bottom of the barrel is, I guess, Kevin at negative 18 points, Shannon with negative 12 and Jack's wig with negative 10.
I love that Shannon is down there with the asshole with who's going to abandon his fiance and a terrible wig.
Yeah.
Oh, I think she's so bad.
Jack's wig is the new Ethan.
I mean, yeah. He walked into that emergency room. That's the first thing my eyes went to. I was like, what is that?
Oh, fuck. All right. Let's do some final impressions. How about Christy? What's up with you? What are you thinking after this episode?
I've forgotten a lot about what's going to be happening soon. I seem to remember a little bit of it, I think. But I'm really excited that we're in the hatch, that we've met Desmond. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I can't wait to see what happens next.
Ben, what do you think?
a strong showing. I mean, it's a great first episode. You know, they tease you with the hatch. You actually get a little more into it. You start to understand a little bit more about what's going on there, but not really. Like, they kind of set the table, but you don't know what's being served at this point. Mm-hmm. I like the way that they, you know, tying Desmond and, you know, seeing another life brother and all that, and then having that sort of reveal that they were actually here in the same place somehow. And I really liked the way that they're continuing to play up the tension between like Jack and Locke's sort of philosophies of leading and of just sort of existing on the island. So, yeah, I mean, all in all, I thought it was a really, and, you know, obviously Jack's sort of backstory with Sarah and him trying to be the fixer. It was just it kind of pushed all the right buttons, I think.
Yeah, so for me, I thought the writing was incredible and like what a powerful way to come back as a second season opener. The fact that there were two massive reveals that bookended the episode, I thought was intense because you usually don't get that. When you get one big reveal, you get one big reveal. And the fact that they gave that to you in the first 2 minutes really like catches you off guard that there's another huge one coming at the end. And I think it just blows me away. And also the twist where it's been, you know, Locke is like, I have to get in there. It's my destiny. This is what I'm supposed to do. And they get down there and it's like somebody from Jack's past. And it's just, holy shit, whose destiny really is this? And I wonder, like, is Locke going to be jealous when he realizes that Jack and Desmond know each other? I imagine that's going to irk him, right? Because it's supposed to be
his
destiny.
We're going to have to send him to the jelly school.
I don't know. I don't think it would irk him. I think he'd be happy to see it because he would see that as evidence that this is Jack's, same as his. It's his destiny as well
destiny,
as Jack's.
Yeah.
I just wonder if he would feel left out by that
he's not the one
that, you don't think so
on his destiny.
I don't think so.
Well, I guess
I just think it's just any just destiny in general. Like, I guess he probably thought it was Boone's destiny to die.
Yeah, I mean, it's called Man of Science, Man of Faith. I think if there's anything that this shows, like, Locke wants Jack to be more of a man of faith. And
what could be more convincing than that
than
I guess
running running into this guy. Okay.
yeah that makes sense. Okay, so Derek, what are your final impressions and what questions do you have after this opener?
This is actually my favorite episode so far in the series.
Nice.
I loved this episode. It was really, really good. And we finally found out what was in that hatch.
Mm-hmm.
And after all this time and that, it was, you know, Desmond who's in there, who we met earlier in that flashback in the stadium. So my biggest questions are, who is Desmond and why is he in the hatch?
Yeah, that's a pretty big
question. And also,
question.
Where is Kate?
Where is Kate? Okay, so, tune in. We're going to find Kate soon. You're going to learn a little bit about Desmond in the next few episodes, but it's going to take the rest of this season to get more into his story. Desmond is one of my favorite characters of the entire show.
Absolutely.
Brother. Indeed.
And his story is great, and we'll get into it. I'm so glad to be back. Thanks to all the listeners for coming back with us. And press stop on this and play episode 2. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Y'all. Bye.
Lost in My 40s is a Space Bear Media production. Executive produced and edited by me, Lacey J. Sound engineering, editing, and original music by Benjamin Trim. Like and follow Lost in My 40s on Facebook to interact with your hosts. Plus, follow Space Bear Media on YouTube to watch our episode pre-shows. You can also find us at SpaceBear_Media on Instagram and Twitter. Or come to our website, spacebearmedia.com.